Did you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur. Just a quick shout out to remind everybody that our next Law Entrepreneur Book Club review will be held on Friday, March 16th at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Over on our Facebook channel, we'll be doing a live event there reviewing Jim Cialdini's book, Influence, The Psychology of Persuasion. If you're not familiar with that book, it's a bestseller and one that's recommended, you know, by a jillion people as being a very, you know, important for people who are in all walks of life, but who have to make a persuasive case, whether it be before a jury, in front of a judge, to a prospective client, to a room full of potential new hires, whatever the case may be. So Jim Cialdini's book, Influence, The Psychology of Persuasion, we'll be doing that on March 16th at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Pop on over to our Facebook channel and you'll be able to watch the review live, or after it's completed, you'll be able to watch it on the recording. So hope to see you there. Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 102 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Tyra, your host as usual. Today, I'm delighted to bring back two previous guests, not one, but two, making this our first three-way teleconference on the show, Brett Burney and Tom Lembat. Brett was on episode 23, again on episode 78, Tom way back on episode 16, and together they've written a brand new book called Max in Law, which will be available by the time this episode goes live. It'll be available at maxinlawbook.com, all one word, maxinlawbook.com. And the book's primarily geared towards those who are Mac curious or who are contemplating a switch from Windows-based systems to Apple Mac products. And as you know, I'm an unabashed Apple fanboy. So this is timely in that sense because the book came out. They're friends of mine, been on the show before. I thought I'd have them on to talk about the book. And we go on and on a bit here, so talk about some other things relative to technology and the solo practitioner. So I won't bore you with any more introductions. Let's get on to it. Let's listen to Brett Burney and Tom Lembat. Brett Burney and Tom Lembat, welcome back to The Law Entrepreneur.
Hi, thanks for having us.
Yes, thanks, Neil. It's great to be back.
Well, this is exciting to be able to share with the audience and to let you guys know that you're part of my first three-way conference call on Skype.
That sounds juicy. That's great.
So that's working fine.
That's great.
I wanted to have the both of you on because you are the new authors of the book Max in Law.
Yay.
And I understand it's published by the American Bar Association and available on their website.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, this I'll jump in. It's just been a long time coming. We've been talking about this for a while, and it's specifically the law practice division, which historically has been the division of the ABA that specifically deals with, I guess, practice management, if you will. There's usually, I think, three or four little pillars that they have is technology and the marketing and the finance, and I guess generally like practice management aspects there. This is the division, by the way, that runs the ABA Tech Show every year in Chicago, and they put out a lot of books, great books about Office 365 for lawyers, collaboration with lawyers, LinkedIn for lawyers, iPads for lawyers. And so I have just been thrilled to have Tom Lambott as a co-author on this. We've been working on this for a while now. We're very, very proud of the book finally being out and being available now.
Well, I'm happy to say that both of you have been previous guests on the show and friends of mine. So I'm delighted that you banged on that PC ceiling long enough that the practice management division finally said, okay, we'll do a book. We'll do a book.
Yeah, so Macs have officially been recognized. The last time the ABA published a Mac-related book was in 1996, I believe. So it's been a long time coming, long overdue.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong. You mentioned the ABA Tech Show, which, by the way, is coming up this coming week here. Did they drop the Apple track from the Tech Show? Because all I see are all my Apple friends that are presenting at the show.
Yeah, it's funny you should say that. It's got kind of a funny history there.
That's why Tom and I are laughing at it.
Well, no. It's there. So I'll just quickly run through it. This has been, I think, one of the only national arenas, at least from the legal perspective, that has actually recognized Macs in the sense that they have some tracks, some educational sessions devoted to this. I remember Tech Show. One of my first Tech Shows, I think, was probably 2002, 2003, and I do remember a couple of sessions then, even in those early years. But you got it. I mean, that's a while away from the MacBooks that we have today and the capabilities. I mean, that's way before cloud was a technology that a lot of lawyers use today. And so then for a few years, it kind of drifted out. I served on the ABA Tech Show planning board in 2010. And Tom and I go through this in the book a little bit here too. And in that year, we decided as the planning board to bring back what we call the Mac Track, which was basically a whole day, four sessions that were devoted just to lawyers using Macs. And it was a fantastic success. And every one of those sessions were full. And we had that for several years until, I think, Tom was maybe 2 years ago or last year, maybe, I can't remember exactly. They actually stopped it. They did have a couple of Mac sessions, but it wasn't like a whole track devoted to it. Well, I'm happy to say that in this year, 2018, they have brought back the Mac track. Some of the folks that, like you were mentioning, Neil, like Victor Medina and David Sparks and Katie Floyd, were going to be there and talking about Macs in law. So Tom and I are excited that obviously the book is out in time for this so that we can have it there for the show. People can buy it. So we actually just quickly talk about that in the book a little bit. The ABA Tech Show, the fact that we have Mac sessions there. Neil, as you well know, the fact that we have the Macs in Law Office listserv, that's run by Victor and Ben Stevens and several others that we all contribute to. That's a listserv that's, what, almost about 4,700, 5,000 members now, Tom?
Yes.
It's getting big, and there's a lot of it. And we just talk about what are issues and resolutions and solutions for people, for the lawyers that are using Macs. And then we also talk about the Milo Fest conference, which has been an annual conference, held by Victor Medina in there. In other words, these are just some signs that Macs are actually being embraced a little bit more in the legal community as a whole.
And therefore, I'm guessing that gave rise to you deciding to write this book, Macs in Law.
Yeah.
Yeah, tell us about the history of this book, Brett.
Yeah, well, as I said, it's been a long time coming because we sort of always have recognized it. Certainly, Tom and I have recognized this for a long time because of the work we do from a consulting standpoint, specifically with Macs and lawyers. And Neil, there's several other folks like yourself that have been using Macs very successfully in your law practice. And we've kind of always known that it's been there, but it's not like Apple is going out of their way to market Macs. Yeah, yeah. Specifically to the legal field. I mean, they've always been there, but and Tom and I go through this in the book too, that Macs have historically been viewed as sort of a creative, standpoint. That's for like audio and video recognition. Like it's really big in the educational side, but you know, law firms today, a lot of the younger law students that have gone through undergrad, you go to any law school today, and you'll see a lot of glowing apples on the tables. And we see that there has now been a little bit more of a shift. I'm not going to say it's overwhelming. And I think that's one of the reasons that it took so long probably for the book to get out, because we're still between about 8 and 10% of the total number of lawyers, as best as we can tell, that are using Mac. So that's still a small percentage, although that's a big number there. As Tom and I, we write about that in the book as well. And so we just see that it is becoming more embraced. And it was a perfect time for Tom and I to get together, and we had a great time putting this book together. And I think it's going to be quite successful from that standpoint.
Well, I certainly hope it is. Let me push back just on that number a little bit, 8 to 10% of the installed user base. My sense is, just anecdotally, that it's the big law firms and the large to medium to large law firms that skew that number in to a significant extent. Downwards. Yeah. If you looked at the small solo to small law firms, I think the number is the percentage, at least, is completely in the opposite direction. That's just my observation.
Yeah, and one interesting thing that didn't make it into the book, one of the people on my team actually proctors the bar exam a few times a year. He kind of does the tech support. It's pretty boring. He kind of sits there all day long without much to do. And so one thing he does is he counts, you know, the number of Macs, and they're consistently at 60 to 70% of the people taking the bar exam are using Macs. So again, that's the new workforce coming in. And so I think over the next 2 years, that there's going to be a significant increase in the adoption, you know, from the between 8 to 10%. And I agree, you know, with the smaller firms, solos, it's much easier to get started. There's a lot lower security risk right out of the gate. Not that there's none, but that's a whole other discussion. I believe it's going to continually increase as people have, you know, an easier choice. Well, you know, when they graduate, they've got a Mac. In the past, they said, well, I want to go Mac, but I have to go PC because all the firms are using PC. And a lot of the smaller firms now are embracing Apple computers in their firm. They're seeing the benefits and the reasons to do it. And the official, the full name of the book, we haven't mentioned it yet, is Macs in Law: The Definitive Guide for the Mac Curious Windows Using Attorney. So Brett and I, early on, decided that we don't need to convince Mac users that they need to use Macs, right? They're already on board. But I think what I found from my experience working with Mac using attorneys for, you know, about a decade now, is that there's a huge amount that have iPads, they have iPhones, they have iMacs at home. You know, their kids are on Apple computers, and they use them and go, wow, this is great. But I can't run a law firm on a Mac, right? So there's still a lot of kind of long-held myths and beliefs that we kind of overcome in the book.
Yeah, I think that inertia is a powerful force. And so that, yes, for many law firms, and I can understand, I mean, it's the reason I don't switch from some applications to others. I know there's, you know, a guy on the call here who's very supportive of a suite of Office applications for use on Apple products, but I don't, whoever that might be, Brett, I don't switch because, frankly, of the inertia. And I think we have that same powerful force in many law firms. And so I think your specification or your narrowing of the books focused on Mac Curious and those who are considering switching is appropriate, because there, as you said, there's everybody's got all the other tools that they're using on a daily basis, just not in the office.
Yeah, and just for clarity, there's two of those guys on the call. Brett's not alone.
All right, so one of us is an outlier.
Yes, you're down in the third. But there's, you know, I find so many attorneys, when they decide to break away from the firm, you know, they have Max, they own Max, they want to be on Max, but they've never had the opportunity or the option. And so a lot of firms come to us when they're, you know, just starting up brand new. We have a 5-user minimum, so we don't really help solos right out of the gate, but that's something, you know, Brett works with. And a lot of them, they say, hey, I want to do it on Max. That's how I've always wanted to do it. Now I'm going to do it, you know, so... There's a slow acceptance because you've got the cutting edge. You've got the diehard Mac users that have been using Macs in law firms for 10, 15, 20 plus years, right?
Right.
And they said, hey, remember the early days when, you know, they had to use duct tape and zip ties to make it work. Right. And they knew that going in, right?
Yeah.
And there's only a certain percentage that's willing to accept that kind of uncertainty and challenges that they knew they were going into. But who we're really writing the book is the next level, the next wave that says, wow, I can do this. And I don't need to be an IT expert, you know, to make it happen. You know, it's really the thing.
Yeah, I'll throw on top of that, Neil, just real quick. One of the first things we do in our first chapter there, addressing some of these questions, is another reason that we, Tom and I, see that this is becoming even more important is really the cloud or software as a service. As you and I know, all of us knows, there's been a wave of these cloud-based practice management systems like Clio and Racamatter. There's cloud-based litigation support systems, cloud-based time and billing systems, cloud-based, which means that it really doesn't matter what kind of a computer that you're using, whether it's Windows or Mac. Now, there's still a lot of software out there, and we go through all of that in the book and talking about there's a lot of legal specific software for the desktop or for servers that's still Windows only. And that was the case of things what Tom was just mentioning there, which is why, I mean, we call a lot of the folks that you and I would know too, Neil, the godfathers of the Mac lawyers. There's a lot of folks that have been using Macs for a long, long time before the cloud, and they did have to kind of make things work. They were always, trying to convert things or just kind of plug things away wherever they can. But today, it's so much easier now with a lot of the services that are based on. All you need is a web browser. Doesn't matter if you're on a Mac or Windows or an Android or a Kindle, doesn't matter anymore. All you need is that's where software as a service comes into play. The software is running through a web browser. So anyway, we found that was obviously a huge component of pushing this forward a little bit as well. And as we see that's going to be, just as important or more significant, I would say, in the coming years more and more lawyers are probably going to start using Macs based on that as well.
Well, there's no question that the proliferation of cloud resources has made the decision a little easier,
right?
In many respects. I know, just me as being one of those godfathers, I never had an issue, frankly. I mean, there was a couple times I'd have to spend some time converting a document from one format to another, and occasionally there would be problems of formatting and stuff like that. But by and large, I never really had an issue, but there still are roadblocks, or at least there are the belief that people have, a belief that there are roadblocks to converting or changing over to being a Mac or Apple-based office. So talk a little bit about some of those myths that you're punching holes into. I mean, I know I normally hear the cost being the biggest issue.
I have to say, this is my favorite section of the book. This is section two. We go right into this. Section one of the book, we talk about, it's about five chapters, like who is this book for? And Tom wrote a lot of that first section, which is great. We talk about how do you view technology? How do you come about it? In other words, is it an expense or burden versus an investment? That kind of a thing. And is the switch really worth it? But the next section is exactly what you just said there, Neil. Mac myths. We wanted to punch holes in these outdated beliefs, such as Macs are too expensive. It's kind of ridiculous today. Yeah, there may be a little bit more, but Tom, I think, does a really good job in the paragraphs there and explaining. It's like, this is a tool that you use every single day. Your computer, which really can be multiple devices that you work on. It's like, why would you not invest in something that you're going to use every single day? and be frustrated with it. And then we go through a list of other Mac myths that we've always heard. I don't know how to use a Mac. It'll take me too long to learn how to use a Mac. I won't be able to share files with Windows users. That was one of you just mentioned, Neil. We go through about how to make sure that you are compatible with other, because you got to send files back and forth, exactly what you just said, the documents. We've heard people are afraid they're going to be an outlier. They're going to have to cope with endless workarounds, and we address all of that. Another one that I know Tom hears all the time is that their IT says it's not possible. You shouldn't try it. I've got an IT consultant. He says I'm crazy. I should never think about going to a Mac. And we understand there's many reasons back and forth. And in some cases, some people shouldn't maybe switch to a Mac. But Tom, I think, always does a good job in that. And then the last myth that we have is, we hear this all the time, there's no legal software available for Macs. That one actually does probably have a hint of truth to it, in the sense that, you know, there is no Time Matters for Mac, or there's no Summation for Mac. You know, this there historically hasn't been, but I think we do a really good job of going through there and explaining that. So I've just listed all the myths. Tom, you go ahead and you can pick one or two that you want to talk about a little bit.
You know, I think the Mac is too expensive. I don't think it's too big a one, but the quick response on that one is, you got to make sure you're comparing apples to apples. You know, none of the attorneys I run into are buying, you know, $300 laptops out of, you know, Fry's, you know, bargain bin, because they realize that they need quality computers to work on. So when you're comparing Macs to quality computers, you know, there's really not a big price difference there at all.
And I think the other thing to do is, people often look at solely the acquisition costs and not the lifetime operating costs, because, you know, I am an admitted Apple fanboy, so I am biased, and I know you guys are a little more open-minded. However, you know, when you factor in the cost of everybody needing integration support and virus protection and problems upgrading and all those kinds of things, I think it's pretty much a wash, if not, you know, the cost factor swings the other way.
Absolutely. There's been a lot of research done on that, in comparisons, and large IT departments rolling out, you know, thousands of PCs and thousands of Macs, and then coming back with the numbers. And Macs definitely save money in the long term, you know, just from headache and uptime. But one thing I love about my business, you know, we do is support law firms that use Apple computers nationwide, is that we spend a lot less time putting out fires. And instead, we get to reinvest that time into rolling out new solutions and improving efficiencies and those kind of things. So again, you get what you pay for, right?
Now, one of the other issues, and Tom, we spoke about this when you were on the show the first time. There is, again, the belief, and you referenced it earlier today, that Macs are more secure, although not 100% secure. So talk about those differences and how that might influence a decision maker.
Well, an important thing is there's the flawed belief that, oh, Macs don't get viruses, so you don't have to do anything about security. And I've been beating the drum that, you know, a lot of Mac users are far too lackadaisical in terms of their approach towards security. So Macs are absolutely more secure than PCs, and they absolutely get far less viruses. But there still is malware. There's still, you know, there are a lot of threats. And the what Brett and I, and we talk about this a little bit in the book, but we could have written a whole book just on the security topic itself,
right,
is that the threats, the cybersecurity and the threats in the current landscape have evolved tremendously in the past few years, especially past 5-10 years. 5-10 years ago, everyone was just worried about viruses. Now, a lot of today's threats, you know, are through phishing and emails and compromised credentials, and then they get into your backdoor systems. And those kind of threats don't care if you're on a PC or a Mac. So you still have to, you know, implement security measures and do a lot of different things. That being said, you know, we've never had a client, you know, had their data hit by a crypto locker and things like that. So they are absolutely more secure, but it's not a hall pass to say, I've got a Mac, so I don't have to worry about anything.
This episode of The Law Entrepreneur is sponsored by Market Circle, the makers of Daylight. Do you want to help more clients but don't have the resources? Do you feel overwhelmed by the amount of work to do that you can't even think about getting new clients? If this is you, I urge you to try out Daylight. Daylight is the Mac CRM that streamlines your practice and can save you hours of work each week. Daylight has helped thousands of small businesses, including my own, to manage more clients and cases without adding stress nor chaos. With Daylight, you don't need to fumble through files or notes to know where you are in a case. There's no more CCing your assistant on emails or passing around spreadsheets. Because Daylight now has a new team view that helps you see what everyone in your firm is working on. You can see everyone's appointments and tasks and easily schedule meetings for the entire team or a portion thereof. To learn how Daylight can help your firm, visit marketcircle.com/daylight. Be sure to let them know you heard about Daylight through The Law Entrepreneur to get a 50% discount on your first monthly subscription. That's Market Circle, the makers of Daylight. This episode is also brought to you by my friends at Spotlight Branding. I trust them to manage the internet presence for my law firm, and I recommend them to solo lawyers every chance I get. They built a great website for me, and they use video marketing, social media, email marketing, and more to keep me top of mind with my referral network. Visit spotlightbranding.com to learn more. They're even offering a free gift for podcast listeners, which you can access at spotlightbranding.com/TLE, as in The Law Entrepreneur. Spotlightbranding.com/TLE, brought to you by our friends at Spotlight Branding. On the flip side of that is the belief, mistakenly so in many cases, that, well, if you go to a Mac-based system, you won't need IT support. You can just, you know, you buy the computer and that's all you really have to do. It takes care of itself. And GTOM, I mean, your company is a perfect example of why you can get a lot out of using an expert such as Global Mac IT. It still can be a necessity for the medium to larger size firms.
Definitely. It's more of a mindset. I think for solo attorneys, when you've got 1, 2, 3 people and it's a small team, there's not that much complexity. And so a lot of people go, hey, I went to Mac, so I didn't have to keep dealing with IT people because they were sick and tired of having the blue screen of death and, you know, patch right. Tuesdays, you know, blowing up their computer and that kind of thing. But we support people, and there's definitely issues and workflows. You know, Microsoft's latest release 16.9 introduced a whole, you know, laundry list of issues that were introduced to a lot of end users that installed the update immediately, right? And so there's still definitely a need for IT for the things you don't know when it comes to security and mobile device management and really properly securing data and make sure you have, you know, grasp all that. There's so many different things in the space of IT. It's a lot more than just turning on the computer and running software updates. And so, again, because we're not putting out fires, I've had, you know, law firms come to us and say, yeah, we always had a law firm, a computer that was down. You know, we constantly had a computer in the shop. It's not out of the ordinary. And so they want increased stability, and Apple computers definitely deliver. You know, we have a lot lower failure rates, but a computer is a computer. You know, we have hard drives fail. We have different systems and different parts of the computers go down at times. And so they need to be addressed. It's more stable. It's definitely more reliable than the average PC. But some support is still needed.
And a big challenge, I think, is one of the positive aspects of, in my mind, using the Apple environment and the ecosphere is that, you know, you have the integration of the iPad, the iPhone, and the Apple Watch, and your desktop and your laptop. But because you have all those platforms, it does create more of a management concern because everybody wants to be able to use all of them. If it was just using my desktop computer and that was the only platform I had to deal with, the decision perhaps to migrate to an Apple-based system might be easier.
You know, I'll just jump in and say one thing that Tom and I talk about this in the book as well. For some of the very small firms or even the solo practitioners, one of the ways they can find some support, we're not going to say this is legal specific technology support, but Apple has a fantastic suite of physical Apple stores with, they used to call it the Genius Bar. I think now it's the Genius Grove in some places. But we talk about that and the fact that, you know, not everybody needs maybe a full-time IT consultant. I mean, what Tom does at Global Mac IT for those firms to just kind of put things on autopilot from a security standpoint, from an update standpoint, from a software management standpoint is wonderful. But for a lot of lawyers that are maybe in a much smaller firm or are solo on their own, having access to the Apple stores to get a hard drive replaced, or especially if you purchase the Apple Care, you know, so you can have your screen replaced or something along those lines. Now, they're not going to be able to help you with, you know, exporting your practice management database out necessarily and doing, but they can help you with some of the questions. Just quickly, Neil, as you were talking about, you know, I love some of the integration that all of these devices have. Mm-hmm. You could do this with a Windows and an Android phone. You can use Gmail and you know, Google Calendar and the Google systems to like have everything synced together. But one of the things that Apple has done, iCloud's not the greatest, but I think they have done a very good job of making sure that an iPad and an iPhone and a Mac desktop and a Mac laptop and an Apple Watch can all function together or sort of talk to each other. I'm not saying it's perfect all the time, but it's much better, I found, than some of the other, you know, systems that you'd have to kind of put together yourself, maybe through Google or through other back-end systems. And then I'm just going to throw in real quickly, because another one of the myths that we have is like, there's not the software available. And I've mentioned already that some of the desktop software that have been around for decades on the Windows side, legal specific software. It is true that they're not available for the Mac, but in many cases, in fact, I would say in most cases, number one, we find that if there's a firm using that legacy software, they're probably using less than 15% of the capabilities of that software. I can't tell you how many times I've gone in and asked about, well, you got PC Law or Time Matters, you know, well, are you using the doc management system? No. The time and billing system? No. They're just using some basic capabilities. And in which cases, the cloud-based systems could be even better for that. And then the last point is the two biggest pieces of software that you've already referenced a little bit, Neil, that almost every lawyer is going to be using today. It's Microsoft Office, which Microsoft has done a much better job in the last 2 to 5 years of porting over into the Mac side. That is now available and much, much more comprehensive and collaborative with its Windows counterpart. And then, of course, Adobe Acrobat. Adobe has always supported the Mac side, but we have, and there's other PDF software available on the Mac as well. We talk about that in the book, but it's very important that those two, Microsoft Office and Adobe Acrobat, those two powerhouse, like professional grade software that's almost in every single legal office you find today, those are available on the Mac and they work fantastic on the Mac.
Well, that leads me right into my next question. I mean, you talk in the book about the mindset for switching or exploring, and then you punch some holes into the myths regarding, you know, what's preventing you from doing so. And talk about some of the software that is or isn't available on a Mac platform. Do you at some point lay out a roadmap, or is there such a thing as a roadmap? What should people do if they're contemplating? I think some of it, like I said, inertia. Some people just, where do I start? I have no idea. I'm just going to stick with my PC because I have no idea where to start. Do you address that problem?
And who has the time, right? In many cases, if it's a small firm, if it's a couple of lawyers, we are totally sensitive to that fact that obviously no one has the time. I mean, you're busy trying to beat the street make payroll or just get the next client. So we understand that. And in fact, that's one of the reasons we even talk about that. Tom and I talk about that in the book, that, you know, this may not be a switch for everyone. And in some cases, it might actually be better for you to stay with what you have, what you know, what you're comfortable with. Now, there's a lot of factors that might go into that that would kind of push you more to the Mac side. But we try to recognize that from a practical standpoint. As much as we are all three fanboys on using Macs, we understand from a practical perspective that may not be true for everybody. But to get to your question, we do. We Tom and I went around on this a couple of times because it's difficult to provide a step-by-step, here's how you switch your firm to Mac guide, because everybody's different. Every lawyer is a little snowflake in the sense that they all have a certain way that they do things. They have preferences on the software they use and how they convert a file here and how they file there and what kind of a practice. So we recognize that.
And every lawyer believes that their practice is unique.
To some extent, I believe that is true. I've seen many of them just like you have, Neil. But all of that being said, we felt that it was extremely important for us to at least provide a general roadmap, in which we did. We take a whole section on this. And it generally is looking at taking an inventory at everything that you have right now from the software side, from the hardware side, because if you don't know what you have now, there's no way you're going to be able to know for sure if you can effortlessly switch over to the Mac. We do talk about finding a consultant, whether it's Tom or myself or maybe a friend, somebody like you, Neil, that has been doing that. You know, find somebody that has legal specific knowledge about the technology using in your practice, and then make a plan. Make a plan on the software. Like, how are you going to transition to software? A firm that I talk about in the book here that I helped out, they had about 13 lawyers, so you double that for the total number of users. They were using Windows. They made the switch, but they continued to use Windows-based software for about a year after they made the switch. They were using Windows virtualization software, which we can get into the details of that. It's really cool, actually, but it's a little bit of a pain after a while. But ultimately, they switched to a cloud-based practice management system to replace that. But you need to make a plan on that, right? It's important to make a plan because you can't just walk in one day and snap your fingers and everything is going to be switched. And then that's where we kind of in that section is, here's a sample timeline on this. And Tom, you I thought were very good. We made sure that we kept it general, Neil, but we knew that we had to provide a general roadmap, as it were, like you called it. That's what we call it too, for at least showing people like, here are the steps that you need to take.
Yeah. So it took a few rounds going back and forth because it's a different approach.
Right.
You know, Brett works more with, you know, solo attorneys, and we work with larger firms. I mean, large in my world is 5 to 30 users, you know, ideally kind of 10, 30. But eventually we were able to boil it down as a 5-step process on, okay, for someone who's interested and wants to make the switch, here are some, you know, steps that can pretty much work for everyone and get you a large part of the way there. One important thing we haven't talked about that I want to clarify is it's not a book. The purpose of this book isn't to convince people that Macs are better.
Yeah, right.
Every once in a while, I have someone that comes up and says, well, you know, why don't you try to convince people? And I said, that's never been my approach. You know, if someone's interested, knows they want to go Mac, this book is really the playbook on how to make that happen, how to make the switch, how to overcome. You know, Brett and I spent a lot of time on the front end before we wrote one page to really think, okay, this is who we're writing the book for. We're writing the book for the Mac curious Windows using attorney. What are the questions they're going to have? What are the hurdles they'll have to overcome? What are the challenges within their own team? You know, that's a lot of times you've got the managing partner who loves Macs and wants to do it, but that doesn't mean everyone else on the team is going to, you know, be of the same mind. So we really, you know, kind of fleshed out all the different questions that would come up, and then kind of worked our way through helping someone through all those decisions and, you know, steps, and the roadmap's a really good part of that process.
You know, talking about the mindsets of people in the firm, I can't tell you how many guests I've had on the show who have said, well, you know, we switched over everybody except for one person who insisted on keeping their PC with WordPerfect because they weren't going to learn, you know, another system.
Bless them. Yeah. That's all I can say.
Exactly.
Go forth and be blessed.
And of course, there's always those lists of, you know, what's the best software? What's the best application? You know, what works seamlessly? I'm sure you guys have included some lists such as those in the book, right?
Yeah, so towards the back, we've got a couple of references. We've got it's titled a non-exhaustive reference guide. So we've got it broken down into hardware, software, and then a list of different resources. And so, Brett, you want to add on to that?
Well, yeah, Neil, you get this all the time, just like we do, yeah. Right? You get friends that, and what's the first question? Oh, which Mac should I buy?
Right.
That's really the number one question a lot of times that we get. And of course, you know, as all good legal professionals, we respond, well, it depends. And it does depend, again, on a lot of the factors of your specific practice and what you're doing, whether you're going to be portable or not, whether you want to have an iPad, well, as long as a desktop, how much power do you need? Which, by the way, the vast majority of lawyers don't need anywhere near the amount of power that modern day computers have. Yeah. Well, they think they do, exactly. And I understand that. And hey, they're happy to turn their money over. But we knew, again, that was absolutely one of the top questions people were going to be asking. And that's why we entitled it, like Tom said, it's a non-exhaustive reference guide, right? That's a nice political legal way to approach it there. Obviously there's going to be much more that people are going to want to know. And there's other questions that we can ask, but we at least wanted to provide a little bit of guidance. Like here's the things you should be thinking of when you are looking for whether you want a desktop or a laptop. Here are the items you should be thinking about to make your ultimate decision. And then we do provide some of our own recommendations, but again, it's just simply based on from a generic sense, if you will.
But that's also the section that's going to be easiest to update for, you know, edition number two.
Absolutely.
Yes. One thing I want to add to that. So some of the value that's really in this chapter, you know, specifically the reference guide for hardware, is that it's not just a list of all the computers Apple has to offer, right? It's really taking the consultation that Brett and I would give to our clients. You know, right, if they say, right. Hey, okay, who's a Mac Mini for? Right? What's the ideal exactly. use scenario? Why would I get an iMac or, you know, a MacBook Pro or MacBook Air? So it really explains for each computer what kind of the ideal use scenario is, which I think has a lot of value. And we also talk on the non-computer, you know, we go down to some of the hardware items that are non-computers, like printers, scanners, that kind of thing.
Right. I was going to ask third-party hardware.
Yes, yeah, so we cover that as well and give some references. Again, it's non-exhaustive. It's a good disclaimer to throw in. Right. But it has it really covers the main nuts and bolts that a small firm is going to need to get up and running. And a lot of the questions that they're going to ask. And that's also covered in the step four for making the roadmap is taking a look at all the hardware. What have I got? Is this going to work with Macs or do I need to get something else? Right. So it kind of brings all those questions and all the things they might not think of until they make the switch and then they plug in and then they go, oh yeah, this won't work. You know, so we help you avoid those changes, those last minute surprises.
Well, you can't get three Mac nerds in a room without somebody asking the question, well, what was the workflow that you used in order to create this product? So I'll ask the obvious question. How did the two of you collaborate to generate the manuscript?
We use Windows computers.
Oh,
I'm kidding. Come on. No, of course we use Mac. We use Microsoft Word. Yeah, we use Microsoft Word. I will say, Tom, and you can jump in too. Honestly, one of the things that was indispensable for this, Neil, if you want to nerd out a little bit on this, is we did use Dropbox a couple of times to share some files, but the most important tool I think that Tom and I used throughout all of this was Microsoft OneNote. We were able to share all of the chapters and different chapters. Anytime we had something else about the marketing of the book, or we needed to talk about, you know, the structure of the book or outlines. In fact, I would just quickly say, Tom and I would get together at his office and do whiteboard workflows on how this was going to look. And I would take a picture with my iPhone on an app called Office Lens. It's from Microsoft, right? It sucked it right into Microsoft OneNote, into the section that I said, and it actually OCR'd all the writing on there. So we were able to search and share everything through there. So I don't know if, Tom, you had a different experience, but to me, Microsoft OneNote was a lifesaver for that. Tom was down in Florida and I was up in Ohio as we were writing this. We were traveling all over the place. Sometimes we'd get together in person and work on it, but having that was actually fantastic.
Yeah, OneNote was great. I was going to say, though, the tool we used the most to write the book was actually the Expo dry erase markers. We did a tremendous amount of work on the whiteboard in my office. Yep. Fortunately, Brett and I were both living in Cleveland at the time. I just moved down to Florida 6 months ago with my family, so I run the company remotely now, which is wonderful. And I'm in flip-flops as a big storm is rolling in towards Cleveland. But OneNote, Microsoft Lens is a very cool app that we use a lot, as Brett stated. But it's really just those two tools, using OneDrive for sharing so we could both be working in OneNote at the same time and see each yep. other's notes sync, you know, in real time, was really cool.
And did you use Word as your processor of choice? Or?
Yes.
Yeah, we would. Yeah,
we use Microsoft Word and, you know, change tracking and all that.
Yeah.
To add a little bit more about, you know, the Mac guy and why two-thirds of this discussion is loving 365, being an Apple consultant for, you know, 10 years now, I don't do the consulting, you know, stuff too much anymore. But, you know, I came from the early days of Entourage. That was a nightmare. You know, that was horrible. The different versions and, you know, 2011 was still really bad. And, this current version of Office 365, Microsoft has done an amazing job. You know, my tech guys on my team actually have direct access to the Microsoft development team, building the Apple products. So there's a very active Slack channel in the Mac admins group, and so there's, you know, they're talking to the Mac community in a very active manner, and it all comes from the CEO who, you know, a couple of years ago said that he wants to make all of the 365 apps the same quality, you know, from any platform. And so they've really bridged the gap between the Windows version and the Mac version. So they're essentially getting closer and closer and closer. And the 365, you know, the current suite of apps for the Mac is rock stable and really, really good.
I know you guys are just trying to convince me to forgive them for abandoning for abandoning the platform 8 years ago, 9 years ago, leaving me high and dry. I've never forgotten it, and I'm not bitter. But
you don't have to make a choice anymore, Neil. That's the thing. That's what was so fun writing this is kind of along the lines of what Tom was just saying. Because I know you, Neil, and I know folks that did that. They switched it. Like I want to have nothing to do with Microsoft, and so you use Pages on the Mac, and those are great applications. All of that is fantastic, but. As we've already referenced several times already, the SaaS, the cloud, the fact that Microsoft has made a commitment, like Tom said, into Office 365, that all of that banded together is, I think, really what is so significant in this book coming out now, as well as just really helping lawyers. Or frankly, I think we like to look at it as it just gives lawyers more flexibility.
Sure.
You're not going to have to be pigeonholed any longer in this, because you can have the best of both worlds. Really, you can work on a Mac, but you can still use the software like Microsoft Office 365 that is going to be more compatible with, you know, the other 90% of lawyers that are using Windows PCs.
Well, I've heard you speak of the virtues of OneNote enough to know that from at least your perspective, that alone is reason enough to buy Microsoft Office 365.
Actually, OneNote is free. I tell people a lot. I know people are still hesitant to move into Office 365, whether it's because they're nervous about the cloud, whether it's because they don't like the fact that it's a subscription-based model. Well, and I think we even addressed this, Tom, if I'm not mistaken, in the book. Both of those things are inevitable.
Inevitable
is really the word I would say
for all software platforms.
Exactly, Neil. Exactly. And so, I'm maybe you can hold on for another couple of years, but if you don't start at least being open to it and maybe exploring it now, you're going to be behind the times, and that's not good these days on there. And what I like about it is it's not like I'm trying to do a veiled threat. I'm telling you, it's going to be better in what you do. Not to you specifically, Neil, although you know, I love you, man. Yeah. And it's true. But I'm saying for the vast majority of lawyers that aren't as nerdy as you and I are, it's going to be better for them because it's less mess. It's less things that they have to work with. And frankly, it's going to work even better than probably the duct tape that they're doing right now.
Well, I certainly do agree that if you are contemplating a switch, the fact that we now have a robust and a well-supported and a completely capable office platform on the Mac, it's going to remove that roadblock for sure.
Yeah, exactly.
But we've gone far enough down that path. Let's wrap things up here. Let me let you guys talk about yourselves just briefly because I didn't introduce you quite well enough. Tom, tell us a little bit about Global Mac IT and what you guys do.
Yeah, so I started Global Mac IT in 2007. And what we do is focus on working with growth-minded law firms that are looking to maximize the efficiency and kind of boost their profitability through the leveraged and kind of intentional use of technology. But if you boil it down in simple words, we're a managed service provider. So our clients, just for, you know, small, medium firms, pay us a flat fee per month, and we take care of everything IT related. You know, so in the past decade, we've built kind of a business first approach to leveraging the technology, you know, through kind of using all of our existing processes. Time and time again, what law firms are looking for, they want to increase their efficiencies and they want to build better processes. And you know, they usually have very little time to do that, you know, to develop and implement the processes. And so what we do, we come in with our existing kind of proven processes and plug them into a firm and take a look at where they are now, where they need to go, and kind of continually raise the bar through our approaches.
Awesome. Brett, I know you have about 12 businesses that you operate. In the interest of time, can you
limit to three or four? Tom and I work together very well in the sense that if there is a smaller firm that just needs maybe an hour of, you know, consulting time to kind of help them put it, you know, go in the right direction, based on what we've talked about, they've maybe read the book, but they just need a little bit of guidance specifically for their practice. I'm happy to jump on a call with them, you know, for just a couple of hours or so. I usually sell a bucket of hours on that, but I will mention a couple of other things. We're going to I have a blog, maxinlaw.com. We're also going to have a website for the book, maxinlawbook.com. So we'll invite anybody to go and visit there. It'll just be a place where you can easily click through to get to the book. And then along those lines, I have a text expander for lawyers course, which I'm just launching now. Excited to have people jump into that. If you're a Mac user or a Windows user today, you can use this fantastic typing utility. And then the last thing, I promise, Neil, appsinlaw.com. You've been so generous to have me on your podcast before. Appsinlaw.com is a fun blog where I just do short little video reviews of apps that lawyers, it's really focused on the iPhone and the iPad, although I expand that out a little bit. And then I love talking with folks like you on my own podcast on appsinlaw.com, where I just go through and have a lawyer, a legal professional talk about an app that they use every day in their workflow. And in fact, the latest podcast I just had with somebody, he's an appellate lawyer out in California, a lawyer there that uses OneNote. And he's talking about how he uses OneNote to organize all of his trials and his appeals process, which is a lot of fun. Okay, yeah, I'll stop there.
I listened to that podcast. It's fabulous.
I have a blast. It's really good. I try to keep it short, but then just like this one, you know, we start talking with folks and we have a lot of fun talking about the apps we use, but I try to make sure that it's useful and practical for folks because you just really want to know how folks like yourself, Neil, are actually, you know, jumping. I think Tom's typing. Yeah. We're almost done, Tom.
I can tell it's Tom typing because it's fast.
Yeah, exactly.
So, okay, let me just pick up. Of our listeners who have heard or think they've heard these voices before, Tom was on our podcast way back on episode number 16. Episode 16, Tom, which was all the way back in May of 2006. And Brett, you weren't far behind. You were on episode 23 initially, talking about the mope. Using mobile devices. That was back in July. And then we had you on again in episode 78 in August of 2017. So these guys, you know, good friends of mine. I love talking to them about Max in particular, but particularly how solo and small firm practitioners can leverage that technology to get more and done and to lead happier lives. And so I'm sure that I'm going to have you back again. I'll see you, Brett, in Chicago in a couple of days. And I want to thank you for being on The Law Entrepreneur one more time.
Wow. Thanks, Neil. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Once again, I'd like to thank our friends at Market Circle, the makers of Daylight and Spotlight Branding, for being sponsors of today's podcast. Market Circles, as the makers of Daylight, provide the tool that I use to manage my cases, my clients, my calendar, my to-dos, the emails, and they do so all in one app that stays with me on my Mac, my iPhone, and my iPad. I use Daylight on my own in a solo environment, but you can also use it in a team. You can use Daylight to track the status of cases and delegate tasks to one another on your team, and you can see everyone's schedule all without having to interrupt anyone. Daylight is one of the tools that I use to stay organized, and it increases my efficiency, and therefore it only stands to reason that it'll do the same for you and your team if you use it in a broader environment. So visit marketcircle.com/daylight to try Daylight free for 30 days. And be sure to let them know that you heard about Daylight through The Law Entrepreneur in order to get a 50% discount on your first monthly subscription. Also, our friends at Spotlight Branding, as always, have been very helpful in sponsoring this podcast. You know, I trust them to manage the internet presence for my law firm, and I recommend them to solo lawyers every chance I get. They built a great website for me, and they use video marketing, social media, email marketing, and more to help keep me top of mind with my referral network. So visit www.spotlightbranding.com to learn more. They're even offering a free gift for podcast listeners, which you can access at spotlightbranding.com/TLE, as in The Law Entrepreneur. So spotlightbranding.com/TLE to access your free gift. And as always, make sure that you visit our website, www.thelawentrepreneur.com, to see everything that's going on with the podcast and subscribe to our newsletter so that you can stay in the know and be the first on your block, so to speak, to gain insight into what's going on here. So once again, thanks for being here this time around. I appreciate your listenership. Hope to see you again next week on The Law Entrepreneur.